ever had that moment where a seemingly small issue at home just snowballs into a major headache, maybe costing you unexpected money or, you know, causing a big battle with your insurance company?
Oh, definitely. It's surprisingly common.
Yeah. And for those of you law students tuning in, especially if you're thinking about like careers in real estate or construction law, that feeling of things going sideways, that might be something you'll actually encounter professionally too.
Absolutely. Which brings us to today's topic. We're doing a deep dive into a really pivotal case, Sabella v. Whistler.
Exactly. Sabella v. Whistler. It sounds like just another case name, maybe, but it's actually huge.
It really is. It's a landmark decision that significantly reshaped how we understand, well, two big things, builder liability, and also how insurance policies get interpreted when property damage happens because of like a sequence of events.
Yeah, a sequence. That's key. So think of this as your shortcut to grasping a really crucial intersection of these legal areas. So we've got the court documents, some analyses of Sabella v. Whistler right here. And our mission, our goal for you today, is to really pull out the core legal principles this case established. Specifically, things like, what kind of responsibility does a builder actually have to future homeowners, even if they didn't buy the property directly from them?
Right. And also, how do insurance companies need to approach claims when, you know, multiple factors contribute to the damage? It's not always straightforward.
Not at all. Okay, let's unpack this. Where should we even begin with this fascinating case?
Well, I think a logical first step is probably just setting the stage, understanding the specific facts of the Sabella case. You know, what exactly happened that led to this whole legal battle in the first place?
Okay, good idea. So we have the builder, J.W. Whistler. And he had quite a bit of experience, apparently. Back in the mid-1950s, he bought a piece of land that used to be a quarry.
An old quarry. Okay, yep. That already sounds like a potential issue.
Yeah, right. And this old quarry site, it had been filled in, but with like loose construction debris and other waste materials. Then just covered over with some topsoil and rocks.
Not exactly ideal building ground.
Not at all. And here's where it gets really interesting for us, legally speaking. Whistler decided to, well, skip any soil testing or thorough inspections of this land. He didn't do it before he started building or during the construction process.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. Then he just proceeded to build a house using relatively shallow footings for the foundation, only about 18 to 24 inches deep. A few years later, he sold this new home to Luciano and Diane Sabella.
And that's where the problems for the Sabellas began, wasn't it? What happened after they moved into their new home?
Almost immediately, actually. After buying it in 1956, the Sabellas started experiencing significant water leaks all over the house. Then about 2 years later, a sewer pipe on their land broke.
A broken sewer pipe. Okay. Yeah.
Now, this might initially seem like, you know, totally unrelated, but this broken pipe started leaking water right into that unstable, uncompacted fill that the house's foundation was sitting on.
Ah, I see where this is going.
Exactly. The result, the ground started to shift and subside. The house actually ended up sinking more than 7 inches in certain areas.
7 inches? That's substantial.
Huge. And as you can imagine, this led to a whole cascade of problems. You know, uneven floors, cracks appearing in the walls, doors and windows that wouldn't open or close properly.
Yeah.
Just a mess. The cost to fix all this damage, around $8,200.
Which was a lot more money back then, too.
Definitely. So, understandably, the Sabellas decided to take legal action. They sued Whistler, the builder, alleging negligence. And they also filed a claim with their insurance provider, National Union Fire Insurance Company, under their all physical loss policy.
Okay, so two fronts, the builder and the insurer. And how did the legal process unfold initially? What did the trial court decide?
Well, the trial court actually ruled for the Sabellas in their lawsuit against Whistler. They found him negligent in building the home.
Okay, so win against the builder.
Right. But they did not rule in their favor against the insurance company. National Union had denied their claim, pointing to an exclusion in the policy for damage caused by settling.
The settling exclusion. Okay, that's often a point of contention.
Yeah. So you had both Whistler unhappy about being found negligent and the Sabellas obviously frustrated that their insurance claim was denied, deciding to appeal. And this is what brought the case eventually before the California Supreme Court.
And what did the Supreme Court do?
They upheld the trial court's decision about Whistler's liability. They agreed he was negligent. But, and this is key, they sent the insurance part of the case back down for further consideration.
Okay, let's really zero in on why the court found Whistler negligent. It sounds like a cornerstone of this ruling and something really crucial for our listeners to grasp.
Absolutely. The court leaned heavily on established principles of negligence. They notably drew from a big precedent-setting case called Stewart v. Cox.
Stewart v. Cox, right.
And the crucial takeaway here, especially for you future lawyers, is that builders have a duty of care that goes beyond just their direct client. They owe a duty of care to prospective buyers of the property, too, even if there isn't a direct contract, you know, what we traditionally call privity of contract.
So no direct contractual relationship needed between the builder and the later buyer for the builder to be potentially liable.
Exactly. The court reasoned that Whistler, being an experienced builder, should have recognized the potential problems when he was digging and found all that loose, waste-filled land. A reasonably careful builder in his position would have done soil tests to see if the ground was actually stable enough to support a building.
Makes sense. Due diligence.
Right. His failure to do that, especially with the obvious signs of unstable fill, that was a breach of his duty of care. And this breach directly caused the foreseeable damage to the Sabella's home. So the core insight is, builders can't just, like, wash their hands of a property once they sell it. They have a responsibility to future owners to build responsibly.
It's fascinating how the court really emphasizes the builder's expertise and the presence of those clear red flags, you know?
Yeah.
Were there specific factors the court highlighted in their analysis of Whistler's negligence?
Yes, they actually laid out five key factors that really solidified their conclusion about Whistler's negligence. These are good to remember. Foreseeability, certainty of injury, the direct connection between Whistler's actions and the injury, the element of moral blame, and broader policy considerations.
Okay, let's break those down quickly.
Sure. First, foreseeability. The court basically said it was pretty predictable that building on unstable soil without proper testing could lead to settling and damage. Makes sense, right?
Second, certainty of injury. The Sabella's $8,200 in repair costs. That was a concrete, quantifiable injury. Third, the connection between conduct and injury. Pretty direct link between failing to do soil tests and the house eventually settling.
Gotcha.
Fourth, moral blame. The court sort of implied Whistler took a shortcut, you know, neglecting his due diligence. And finally, policy. The court believed that holding builders liable in situations like this would help discourage shoddy construction practices down the road.
Right.
And, you know, for our listeners, those core principles of negligence generally involve having a duty of care, breaching that duty, a direct link between the breach and the harm, causation, and actual damages. The court found all those elements were present here with Whistler's actions.
That makes perfect sense. So, okay, the negligence part against the builder seems relatively straightforward based on those factors.
Yeah.
But the insurance side, that's where it becomes more complex, especially with that settling exclusion in the policy. Why did the Supreme Court decide to send the insurance claim back for another look after the insurer had initially won a trial? Okay, yeah, this brings us to a really critical concept in insurance law, the efficient proximate cause doctrine. It sounds complicated, but the idea is important.
Efficient proximate cause, okay.
So the court didn't just look at the most immediate cause of the damage, which, yeah, was the settling of the house. Instead, they asked a more fundamental question. What was the triggering cause or the predominating cause? What really set the whole chain of events in motion?
The trigger. Okay.
In this specific case, the court pointed to the broken sewer pipe. That pipe rupture was an external event, and the court saw it as a covered peril under the Sabella's all physical loss policy.
Ah, so the pipe break was covered.
Right. And it was the water leaking from that broken pipe that destabilized the already iffy soil, leading to the rapid and significant settling. So here's the crucial part. Even though the insurance policy excluded damage from settling, the court reasoned that if a covered peril, the broken pipe, is the efficient proximate cause of the loss, then the insurance company is still liable, even if excluded perils like settling happen later in the sequence.
Okay, so it's about identifying the primary engine of the loss, essentially.
Exactly. That's a great way to put it. Even if other factors contribute, if a covered event starts the chain reaction, the insurer can't necessarily just hide behind an exclusion that gets triggered later in that chain.
That's a really crucial distinction to understand. How does this efficient proximate cause doctrine differ from, say, a simple but-for analysis of causation? Because, you know, many might initially think that way.
That is the key. You hit it right there. A simple but-for test would ask, would the house have settled but for the sewer pipe breaking?
Yeah.
And maybe the answer is yes, eventually, given how bad the soil was.
Right. It might have settled anyway, just maybe slower.
Perhaps.
Okay.
But the efficient proximate cause doctrine, especially how it's interpreted under California Insurance Code Section 530, tells courts to look for the dominant cause, the most substantial cause, the triggering cause.
Section 530.
Okay. Yeah. And in this case, the court decided the broken pipe was the event that actively initiated the destructive process, causing the rapid and substantial settling. They basically rejected National Union's argument that the settling itself was the proximate cause and therefore excluded. Why? Because the settling was a direct consequence of the covered peril, the broken pipe.
So Section 530 kind of overrides the exclusion in Section 532 in this scenario.
Well, the court emphasized that Section 532 of the insurance code, which deals with excluded perils, has to be read together with Section 530, which addresses coverage when an insured peril is the efficient proximate cause. Think of Section 530 as asking, what started the real problem? If the answer is something the insurance covers, then Section 532, which lists things they don't cover, might not let the insurer off the hook if that excluded thing was just part of the chain reaction.
Got it. That clarifies the interplay between those sections. So if we kind of zoom out and connect all this to the broader legal landscape, what are the major lasting impacts of the Sabella v. Whistler decision that our listeners should really be aware of?
Okay, two really significant takeaways, I think, that have had a lasting impact. First, on the builder liability side, this case seriously broadened the duty of care builders owe. It made it clear they can be held legally responsible to subsequent purchasers, people who didn't buy directly from them, for negligent construction.
Especially when they cut corners on diligence, like the soil testing here.
Exactly. Especially when they fail to exercise reasonable diligence, like conducting proper soil testing, particularly when there are obvious warning signs, like the loose fill in this situation. This has huge implications for anyone planning to practice real estate or construction law.
Definitely. And the second takeaway?
Second, in the realm of insurance law, the case firmly established that efficient proximate cause doctrine as a key principle, at least in California. This means when you have a sequence of events leading to a loss, and that sequence involves both covered and excluded perils, courts are going to look for that initial trigger. If that initial trigger is a covered peril, the insurance company will likely be on the hook for the resulting damage, even if an excluded peril was technically the more immediate cause of the loss.
And the specific details of this case, you know, the former quarry, the broken sewer pipe, they really help make these abstract legal principles much more concrete, don't they?
Absolutely. It makes it stick. You've got a seasoned builder who seemingly just ignored clear potential problems with the ground. Then you have what looks like a separate incident, the broken sewer pipe, which acts as the catalyst, the trigger, leading to major structural damage. And the fact that the damages amounted to a specific figure, that $8,200, it really underscores the real-world consequences of this negligence and the fight over insurance coverage that followed. It's just a powerful illustration of how different areas of law can collide and how a seemingly small oversight by a builder can spiral into substantial legal and financial trouble down the line.
Yeah, it really does. Which raises a really important question for you, our listeners, particularly as you're prepping for exams or thinking about your future legal careers.
Mm.
Considering this efficient proximate cause doctrine that Sabella established, how might courts analyze insurance claims where that initial trigger is maybe less clear-cut, or in situations where multiple negligent acts might contribute to a loss?
That's a great point. It's not always going to be as clear as a single broken pipe.
Exactly. And how does this principle try to balance the, you know, the essential need to protect homeowners with the contractual limitations that are clearly spelled out in insurance policies? That's definitely something to chew on as you continue your legal studies.
Absolutely. And, you know, on the builder liability side, too, thinking about that expanded duty of care.
Yeah.
How might future cases handle situations where defects are latent, where they don't show up for many, many years after the original construction and sale?
Right. The statute of limitations issues, discovery rules. It gets complicated.
It really does. These are complex issues that Sabella really brought to the forefront and that courts are still grappling with. Well, thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Sabella v. Whistler.
Yeah, hopefully this breakdown was helpful.
We hope it's given you some valuable insights into both builder liability and insurance law.